mind. I do just want to say real quick, whether you're a Christian or not, we're just glad you're here. This group isn't just for that. Yes, it's a Christian group. I'm a Christian. A lot of Christians are here. That doesn't mean you have to be. So we're just glad that you're here and you came. So open up to Job. Job chapter 1. Job chapter 1. It's kind of like right in the smack dab in the middle of the book, or in the Bible. This semester, we are going through different big questions that we have, that other people have, people maybe in your family have, directed toward God. Is the Bible reliable? Isn't Christianity socially divisive? What about science and faith? Like, what kind of relationship is there between Christianity and scientific evidence? Is there really only one way to God? Can a wrathful God be loving? Or can a loving God be wrathful? Tonight, we're going through the question, if God is good and he's powerful, why is there suffering and evil in the world? So if he's good, he doesn't like evil, and he's powerful, he can do something about it, then why is it there? Why does it exist? So my friend, his father, one of my best friends, his father named Jim, and Jim was diagnosed with cancer back in 2014. And for about 2.5 years, he suffered with this cancer. He actually came, lived in Lexington, Kentucky, but they actually came to Houston, to MD Anderson, to be able to get treatment for this cancer. And about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, he was told that he had 6 weeks to live. And he's there with his family on the, floor that he was at in the hospital. He's in his scrubs or whatever, whatever you call the thing he's in his gown. And he was told, yeah, you have 6 weeks to live. Apparently, my friend said that he nodded. He looked at everybody in the room and he walked out. And he just kind of paced the halls. They didn't know what he was doing. And he came back and it turns out they said, what did you just do for the past 30 minutes to an hour? And he said, I actually was just praying for every single person on my hall who was also sick. So this man, who did eventually pass away, the first thing he did when he heard he was going to die officially was he started praying for other people. It was amazing. Like, I want to be that. You want to be that. In some way, shape, form, or fashion, when suffering hits you, you want to be the kind of person that is better through it or better because of it. But it's hard, right? Because when suffering and evil hits, it does cause us to question some pretty serious things about God. First, it causes us to question his presence. It also causes us to question his power, and also causes us to question his care. So like his presence, like, is he even there? Does he exist to even do anything about it? Or if he is there and he has power, I mean, can he actually do anything? Maybe he's powerless to do something with it. Like, he doesn't like it, but he can't do anything about it. Or maybe he does have the power. He's just choosing not to, right? So he's not good because he's not doing anything about it. So it causes all these different questions that we might have. And this isn't really, like, theoretical, right? I mean, you turn on the news, like, mass shootings, hurricanes, you have disease, sickness, random death, you have oppression, violence, you have racism, sexual abuse, loneliness, you have bullying. I mean, you have all sorts of things in this world, and you and I have gone through it. Like, it's not just out there. Like, it's in your life. So this is real. It's a real question. So Job is a great book for us because it's a historical account about a very, very ancient person who suffered greatly, and it doesn't answer everything about suffering and evil, but it does a good job to get us going and to at least get us to walk through it a little more. So we'll ask three different questions going through it, and we'll try to answer them. Is God there? Is he able to do anything about it? And does he care? So is he there? Does he have the power to stop it? And does he care in regard to suffering and evil? So I'm going to read Job starting in verse 6 of chapter 1. I'm going to go all the way to verse 22. So Job chapter 1, verse 6. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord. And Satan also came among them. The Lord said to Satan, "From where have you come?" Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro on the earth and from walking up and down on it." And the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth? He's a blameless and an upright man who fears God and turns away from evil. And then Satan answered the Lord and said, does Job fear God for no reason? Have you not put a hedge around him and his house and all that he has on every side? You've blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. But stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he'll curse you to your face. And the Lord said to Satan, behold, all that he has is in your hands. Only against him do not stretch out your hand. So Satan went out in the presence of the Lord. Now there was a day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And there came a messenger to Job and said, the oxen were plowing and the donkeys feeding beside them. And the Sabians fell upon them and took them and struck down the servants with the edge of the sword. And I alone escaped to tell you. While he was yet speaking, there came another and said, the fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them. And I alone have escaped to tell you. While he was yet speaking, there came another and said, the Chaldeans formed three groups and made a raid on the camels and took them and struck down the servants with the edge of the sword. And I alone escaped to tell you. While he was yet speaking, there came another and said, your sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And behold, a great wind came across the wilderness and struck the four corners of the house. And it fell upon the young people and they are dead. And I alone have escaped to tell you. Then Job arose, he tore his robe, shaved his head, and fell on the ground and worshipped. And he said, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And all this, Job did not sin or charge God with wrong. All right, so Job is recorded as a real person, very, very ancient and somewhere in the modern day Middle East. So just east of, say, Israel. So he's not quite an Israelite, but he's probably a Hebrew of some kind. He, in verse 1, which you didn't read, said he's in the land of Uz, which again is likely somewhere in the east. And he's a wealthy guy. Stuff is going good for Job. Like he's living his best life now. It's what you read in the beginning of Job. We didn't read that. But he's got everything he wants. I mean, his family's doing well. He's very wealthy. He has security, right? Everything's going fine. But it quickly turns. Because what you see in verse 6 going through verse 12, it's sort of like the veil is pulled back between the seen and the unseen world. And what you see is this group of angelic beings standing before God, almost like a courtroom. And in walks it says, and they're called, by the way, the sons of God in verse 6, which is another way of saying angels or spiritual beings. And in walks Satan. Interestingly, in Hebrew, it actually says the Satan. So there's an article in front of it because Satan in Hebrew means adversary. It means to be against one, to be against somebody. So it's almost like here, the way it's recorded, it's like emphasizing this is who he is and what he does. He is against everything that God is, and he's against everything that Job is. So he's the adversary. He's the Satan. He's coming in. And very quick aside, I've said it a million times, if it's difficult for you to believe in angels and things like that, that's fine. That's great. We can talk more about that at some other time. I'll just suggest that if God does exist, then it's not a far stretch to say that there are other spiritual beings that might exist that are similar to him. So this is what the Bible describes. These beings are real, and this is what's being said here. We can talk more about that if you want. So what does he say? What happens? Well, in verse 7, God's like, where have you been coming from? And Satan essentially says, I've been patrolling the earth. I've been walking around. I've been observing, been looking at stuff. Verse 8, the God says, well, have you considered my servant Job? Like, have you thought of him? Like, he is blameless. He doesn't really do anything wrong. He fears me. In fact, he loves me so much, he's willing to turn away from everything else other than me. Like, he wants me more than anything else. And Satan's response is, no, he doesn't. Like, he doesn't actually love you. You've given him a lot of good things, so now he loves you. But take those things away, or more accurately, let me take those things away, and I'll curse you to your face, is what he says. And God says, very well.
You may touch what he has, but you can't touch him. So he does permit Satan to bring suffering into Job's life. So more on that in a second. But for now, what is happening here is very clear, is that suffering and evil is present, and God is also very present. He's there. So the first difficulty, the first question that you might have, or your friends might have, or your family might have, is suffering and evil seems to suggest that God's not there. Like, we ask the question, does he exist? Maybe he doesn't. This is commonly called the problem of evil, and it is a problem for those of us who think that God exists. But I want to suggest it's actually a bigger problem if God doesn't exist. And here's why. I'll read this very long quote, and I'll try to read it in such a way. Oh, yeah, it's fine. I'll try to read it in such a way that you stay involved. but it's by C.S. Lewis. C.S. Lewis was a former atheist, and he says this kind of about his process of becoming someone who believed in God and then eventually a Christian. He says, if a good God made the world, why has it gone wrong? For many years, I simply refused to listen to Christians' answers to this. But then that threw me back into another difficulty. My argument against God was that the universe seemed so cruel and unjust. But how I had got that idea of just and unjust? A man does not call a line crooked unless he has some idea of a straight line. What was I comparing this universe with when I called it unjust? If the whole show is bad and senseless from A to Z, so to speak, why did I, who was supposed to be a part of the show, find myself in such violent reaction against it? Of course, I could have given up my idea of justice by saying it was nothing but a private idea of my own. But if I did that, then my argument against God collapsed too. For the argument depended on saying that the world was really unjust, not simply that it did not happen to please my fancies. Thus, in the very act of trying to prove that God did not exist, I found I was forced to assume that one part of reality, namely my idea of justice, was full of sense. Consequently, atheism turns out to be too simple. So long, I know. But the point is this. We have this deep sense that something is terribly wrong in this world. And then you might say, well, that means that God is not there. But then you have to ask the question, if there is no God, then what higher standard are you making that judgment through? Like, what are you basing your judgment that the world is not right upon? If the natural world is all there is, then life is all about the survival of the fittest. You know, the evolutionary mechanism says that the way life goes is those who are strong are meant to dominate those who are weak in order to survive. And there's nothing wrong about it. It's just the way that it is. You know, if you punched me in the face, it's not that it's wrong. It's just you exerting your dominance. It's you possibly making yourself more likely to survive than me. You know, cancer isn't awful. It's just, you know, you have brain sensations in your brain. You have neurological firings that are telling you that doing things that lead to cancer is something you should avoid in order to help you survive. It's not that there's something wrong with that disease. It's just something that eventually ends organisms, right? Poverty, it's not sad. It's just weaker people, maybe with less resources, maybe with less education, who probably won't survive when compared to stronger people, people with more resources, more education, right? And that's all it is on this scheme. Racism, it's not evil. You just have one group exerting power over another group. This is survival, right? So it we know deep down, though, that suffering and evil is wrong. Like, it's bad. There's something wrong with it. It's not just my opinion that it's bad. I know that it is. I know that it ought not be. But again, if there's no higher standard out there to make that judgment, then things like this just are. But we know that's not true. With God, we're outraged at the way the world is. But without God, our outrage doesn't make any sense. This is why C.S. Lewis eventually became a believer in God. He said, look, my outrage makes sense. There must be, like, I have a problem with God, but he's there. Because it makes sense of the fact that there's something wrong with everything that is. I had a youth kid in St. Louis named Jordan. I was a youth guy there. And in a matter of years, his dad had walked out on the family, and he lived with his mom, him and his older brother did. And randomly, and this would have been, he was 16 at this time, randomly his mom had a brain aneurysm and died. It was extremely fast. It was overnight. I mean, it just shocked everybody. And Jordan eventually lived with a woman in our church. And he and I were hanging out one day, and we're driving around, and I actually asked him, because I knew him really well, I just said, hey, like, what did this suffering, years later, what did this suffering do for you? Like, how has it affected you, especially in regard to God? And he said, this is so fascinating how he said this. He goes, you know, I've seen a lot of people who have gone through something like this that I have, especially losing a parent. And he said, it kind of does two things to people. One, it either causes people to doubt that God is there, or it causes people to cling to him all the more, which is really fascinating. I think that's true. He said for him, it caused him to cling to God all the more because it gave him every reason in the world to say, look, this doesn't make any sense without him. It's hard for me to process with him, but it's better than without him. And this is exactly how Job is interacting with suffering and evil in this. I mean, natural disasters come his way. Human disasters come his way. And how does he respond? Verse 20. Then Job arose, he tore his robe, shaved his head, and fell on the ground, and he worshiped. So the two things he does is he grieves, and then he worships. And this is what we have to do. This is our response. It is right and good to look at our suffering and go, yeah, I don't know what to make of God in this, but he's definitely there. The response is you have to grieve. Like, you have to be sad about it. You have to actually hate it. This is not, like, Christianity is not have more faith and bad things won't happen to you. That's something that sometimes is told. That's false. That would be the religious answer to suffering and evil. It's not pick yourself up and the pain will go away. This is sort of the positive psychology response to suffering. Like, you can actually get yourself out of this on your own. But what if you can't? What if you don't have that power? It's also not the, well, just the way the world is, so get used to it. That'd be kind of the skeptical response to suffering and evil. It's just in the world. We don't like it, just our opinion, but there's nothing really wrong with it. None of these things work. God's existence doesn't mean that suffering and evil go away, but it does mean that you have someone to be sad toward. Like, I'm pretty convinced that half the time that you and I suffer, it's not so much the pain that we have a problem with. The problem is that we avoid actually taking that pain to God. We also avoid taking that pain to other people. But our biggest problem, in one sense, is not our pain, it's just that we don't want to share it with anyone. We don't actually want to grieve it. We avoid being sad. We avoid going, this sucks. This is terrible. But we need that. We need to actually grieve it. We also just need to worship, though. And that's what Job does. What you see is that all the pain that Job goes through, it doesn't make him need God less. It actually makes him need God more. He needs God more. Whatever you go through, it's not that you need God less. You actually need to cling to him more. So you need to grieve. You need to worship. God's there. It's hard. It's complicated. But he's someone you can actually go to in it. It actually founds what you feel about suffering and evil. So he's there, but is he able to do anything about it, right? Is he powerful enough to do anything about it? So Satan, when he comes in verses 9 through 11, he's a great skeptic. You know, I'll read it. 9 through 11. Does Job fear God for no reason? Have you not put a hedge around him? Has his, and his house and all that he has on every side? You've blessed the work of his hands and his possessions. You've increased in the land, but stretch out your hand and touch it, and he'll curse you to your face. You know, like, you've put a hedge around him. You've protected him. You've given him everything he wants. Everything, you know, he has is great. That's why he loves you. And it's interesting in Hebrew when it says he'll curse you to your face, it actually says he'll bless you to your face. It's like the Hebrew way of not even wanting to say that you curse God. So they use a different word for it. But he says, yeah, if this happens, he's not going to love you. So his goal in bringing all these different calamities into Job's life, Satan's goal, is to prove to God that Job really doesn't love him. But then what happens? You know, in the end, it's the exact opposite. God does permit things to happen. He's not the one bringing the pain into Job's life, but he does allow Satan to do it. But in the end, Job doesn't love God less. He loves him more. Like that's what ends up occurring for him. So God does permit suffering and evil into our lives, but only to the extent that it would cause us to love him more. This is really hard, but it's really true. This is what we're seeing in this. Each of us have a problem loving people for who they are. So like if I love Meredith because she's pretty, and she is, tell her I said that, because she's intelligent, because she is, because she's hip and fun, because she is, because she's a good mom, because she is. The question then is, am I loving her because of all the good things about her that, you know, are brought into my life, or do I love her for her? They're closely aligned, but they're not the same, right? You know this with friends here. I mean, a bunch of y'all are meeting a ton of new people, and what crosses your mind is this person going to be fun in my life? Do I want to hang out with them? There's nothing wrong with that question ultimately. But here's the thing. If you only pursue people because you think that they're going to make your life better, make your life fun, whatever, then you're using them. I mean, let's just be honest. It's networking at its finest. You're instrumentalizing them for your good time. And none of us like that. God doesn't either. God doesn't want that from us. So when pain comes in your life, it's only there so you'll begin to love God for who he is and not for what he can give you. It's hard, but it's true. And you might then go, okay, that makes a lot of sense. I can think of a lot of things in my life, other people's lives, where I can see that result. It actually clears away a lot of other stuff, and it purifies my love for God. But I don't know why blank is in my life. I don't know what blank is for you. Like, it makes sense out there, but like not for this, whatever this is. What I would say to that is this. If God is big enough for you to be mad at for the suffering and evil in your life, then he's also big enough to have good reasons for it and to have not told you why. I mean, if he's big enough to be mad at, he's big enough to also withhold what's going on. What you see in Job, I mean, in our passage in the beginning of this interaction, but then throughout the entire book, is he never finds out why all this is going on in his life. We find out, he does not. He's left in the dark. So here's the thing. God might have good reasons for everything that's gone wrong in the world, but he's actually chosen not to share it with us. And he has that prerogative. If he is who he is, he has the right to be like, I'm not going to share. I'm not going to say. Or God might have good reasons, but if he did tell us, we might be too stubborn to even receive it. There might be an issue in us, a sin, a brokenness, a wickedness that like prevents us from even taking it if it was there. Those are two possibilities. I think this last one is actually most probable. God might very much have good reasons for suffering and evil in this world, but he couldn't explain it to us if he tried. Why? So Sophie recently, if you know anything about babies, they had to get shots. They had to get many shots at different stages, and it's really sad. Because what you do is you go to the doctor, and we did this at her, I think her 6-month visit, and we took her to the doctor, and the doctor said, hey, lay Sophie down on the table, and dad, because mom was already crying in the corner, dad, you know, go over to Sophie, and I want you to pin her arms down, and we are going to give like 2 shots in one leg and like 1 shot in the other. And the first shot hits and like nothing really, and then it's like the second shot, and then you know, like crying, yelling up at me, dad, why is this happening? Right? And it's awful. But I'm 30 years older than her, and there's no way to communicate to her good reasons why this is going on. How much more with God? Like, he very well might have good reasons, but you and I are on a whole different level compared to him. A whole lower level. He's on a whole other level compared to us. It might not even make sense to us if it tried. There's a sense that we have to give him room to be who he is. And I know this is not theoretical, y'all. Why am I a divorce kid? I don't know. It's not good. It's affected my entire life, right?
Why do I have certain anxieties that seem to not go away? I don't like it. I hate walking into a room of new people and feeling scared. Do you? I don't know why that's in me, right? I don't know why I've experienced verbal and emotional abuse in the past. I don't know why I've been bullied in the past. I don't have the answers for it. But God is big enough for me to trust that he has good ones to have allowed it for me. It's hard. This is what's going on. And the other thing about this, if you actually take a step back, you go, what this means, though, is if I can ingest, if I can believe, if I can actually take this in, that God is somehow in control, even of the pain and suffering in my life, that means that the pain and suffering in your life doesn't control you. Like, you are out of control of those things. And when your life becomes out of control, you can at least, even if you don't understand why, you can at least say, yeah, but God is. Like, the worst stuff that can happen to you doesn't have to derail you because he's in control. Like, that's actually good news. It's hard news. It's mysterious news. You might not be able to know exactly what's going on, but you have enough to trust him even when you have no control. That's good. So he is there. He is able to do something, and he's doing it for different reasons. He's allowing it for different reasons. But does he care? This is the kicker. This is the hard one for us. I mean, part of the reason Job is able to cling to God the way he does is because he actually looks back at the good things God had done to him. The reason I say that is because in verse 21, when he's gone through all this pain and suffering, he says, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return. The Lord gave, and the Lord's taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." What he's saying is, look, God has been good to me in the past. I'm trusting he's going to be good to me in the future. Like, it's going to continue. And that's fine. That's a good way of viewing God. How this applies to us is that you can also look back at the good things that God has done in your life to prove that he's actually being kind to you and still might in the future. We actually have something bigger to look back to, though, to see that God's been kind. And it's through Jesus. Like, here's why. In Jesus, we see that God did not make himself immune to our pain. Like, God comes to earth. Jesus claimed to be God in the flesh, to come to earth to actually put suffering and evil on him in order to heal it. And there's no other religion, there's no other worldview that actually claims this in any capacity. Some views say that suffering and evil is an illusion. Like, that's the answer to it. It's just not real. So get over it. Another view is that suffering and evil is somehow a part of God, that it is the divine. There's no distinction. So again, it's not that big a deal. Like, another view is that suffering and evil is merely a test. I think to some extent it is a test, but what it then goes on to say is that God actually is removed from all the suffering and evil we go through. He doesn't feel it. He doesn't go through it. We do. And then the other view is kind of a skeptical view. It's just there. You just don't like it because your neurons are firing that way. It's really not wrong, though. Like, those are the views that are available. This is the only one where it says God doesn't make himself immune to your pain. He doesn't make himself immune to your problems. Because, look, if Jesus was God come to earth, that means that God knows what it's like to cry. Because Jesus cried. God knows what it's like to feel abandoned. Because Jesus was abandoned. God knows what it's like to sweat, to ache, to be afraid, to not know what was going to happen, to bleed. God knows what it's like to have his life drained from him. No one in this room has died, to my knowledge. But what this means is that God already knows what that's like ahead of you, before you. He has felt it. You know, Diane Langberg is a great, she's a trauma therapist. She's done this for 40 years, and she's a Christian. She says this: there's no part of any tragedy that he has not known or carried. He has done this so that none of us need face tragedy alone, because he's been there before us, and he'll go there with us. So when you cry, when you feel alone, when you feel rejected, when you're hurting, when you get injured, I mean, when anything goes on in your life, you can actually say, God knows what this is like. Like, he's been through it. He suffered it too. But, like, at the top of this entire list is that, like, when Jesus is on the cross, he's not just you know, dying. He's not just losing his life. He's losing a relationship with the Father. Like, yes, we can say that Jesus is God. In the one sense, he has a relationship with God. This is the mystery of the Trinity. But track with me. This is him not just losing life. He's losing a relationship. This is why when Jesus died, he cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why have you left me? Why have you abandoned me? I'm lost right now. Jesus was the person that deserved heaven, but he got hell instead. Because he loves you. Because he loves me. Like, love motivated him to take that on himself so you wouldn't have to. And you wouldn't have to alone. So that you wouldn't have to go through that all by yourself. I mean, Jesus, here's the thing. Jesus didn't just, like, we can say, okay, this is great. Like, God knows what I'm going through. He's been through it. It's not just that he went through it just to go through it, though. He went through it so that he could actually reverse it one day. Because the whole reason the Christian movement got off the ground, this is what we talked about last week, was that when Jesus died, he woke up. Like, he opened his eyes again. He is the first person who's able to reverse everything we hate about this world. Like, the process has already started. This is why the end of the Bible, what you see is not people dying and flitting off and going to heaven. You have God bringing heaven down to earth to renew it and to fix it and to make it right, to make it different. C.S. Lewis says this about it. It's great. They say of some temporal suffering, no future bliss can make up for it, not knowing that heaven, once attained, will work backwards and turn even that agony into a glory. So even the worst things we go through will be reversed. Because Jesus can bring life out of dead places because it happened to him. So no matter what you're going through, it's not going to last. And one day it will be reversed. And the answer is not, God has no clue what I'm going through. He said, no, he's there. And he has purposes I don't know about. And he definitely cares because he chose to go through it. That's the kind of God that is. That's the kind of God that exists. He's in control and he cares more than we know. Let's pray. Father, I just pray simply that you would convince each of us, no matter where we're at in regard to you, and you would help each of us because you know the pain that we've gone through, you know the pain that we're going through, you know what we'll go through. So we just ask that you would be kind to us and you would show up and you would cause us to be able to see you maybe in the midst of any dark thing that's going on. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.